You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Easter, everyone. I know it's not an ideal celebration time right now with the Rockets losing 100-83 against the San Antonio Spurs in an Easter Sunday matinee, but that's only because the real celebration occurred on Saturday night when the Rockets clinched the best record in the NBA and home court advantage throughout the playoffs for the first time in franchise history. So I'm going to lead off with that to keep the proper perspective. So on that note, welcome in to Locked on Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's best basketball team. I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790. Yes, the Rockets went down 100-83 on Sunday in San Antonio. That snaps their winning streak at 11 games, drops them to 62-15 on the year with 5 games still to play. The good news, it's largely inconsequential, at least in terms of the big picture. Certainly there are some trends within it that you should watch, but big picture, the Rockets at this point need health more than anything else. Chris Paul sitting out to make sure that left leg gets back to 100%. And the Rockets, without Chris Paul, against the San Antonio team on the road with the third best home record in the NBA and playing for its playoff lives, the Spurs simply look like a much more motivated team, and they played like it. So, to me, that's where you want to start off this show, is acknowledging the reality that the Rockets did not need this game. That's because last night, with Toronto losing in Boston, the Rockets have now clinched number one seed throughout the entire NBA playoffs. First time in franchise history they have done that. So by and large, their goals for the regular season, they're complete. There's nothing more they can accomplish. Now, I don't think that you should shut everyone down, because there are some individual trends within the team that you would like to correct, such as James Harden's three-point shooting. We'll touch on that later in our usual 3 points recap here. But by and large, I don't think you should fixate that much on the score, in this case 100-83, simply because of the fact that the Rockets officially have nothing more to play for. It doesn't matter the magic number being incredibly low. No, there is no magic number. The Rockets have clinched. So at this point, besides getting players feeling good about their games, staying healthy is the main goal. And fortunately, the Rockets came out of it, I would say, in relative decent shape. There were some brief scares with P.J. Tucker and Gerald Green in the first half. Both returned to the game, although maybe those injuries had something to do with the Rockets being even a little more cautious on their drives in the second half after having a couple of close calls. P.J. getting undercut by Patty Mills and taking a hard fall on his hip. I'm sure that'll leave a bruise, and perhaps that leads to a rest day. In my opinion, if you've listened to me here at Locked On Rockets, I've said that P.J. Tucker and Trevor Ariza, two veterans that have yet to rest, both in their 30s, this week, in my opinion, is the time they're likely to get that rest, especially because last week you had Chris Paul, James Harden, Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, all getting some time off. So my guess is this week it shifts to the forwards, especially now that you have Luke Bamute back from his injury to fill some of those minutes. But P.J. had the scariest injury, also had Gerald Green briefly tweak his leg on an awkward collision with Mills going for a loose ball. Other than that, though, the Rockets did get out healthy, and at this point, that's the biggest takeaway. In terms of the product on the floor, aside from being largely disinterested, the other big takeaway I had, let's be honest, the absence of Chris Paul was felt. And I've seen a lot of talk on my Twitter timeline about, well, are the Spurs a tough matchup for the Rockets? Because conceivably, the Spurs could be the 8, or they could be in the 4 or 5 and potentially play the Rockets in the second round. Because 4 all the way through 10 is so tightly bunched, really 4 through 8. There is a little bit of separation now, 2 games between the top 8 and then Denver and the Clippers at 9 and 10. But 4 through 8 are separated by 1 game. So be it in the first round or the second round, you could see the Spurs. And based on the results on Sunday, I'm not especially scared of the Spurs in general. I didn't see anything that made me question what I said before, which is that without Kawhi Leonard, they're not an especially scary opponent. There's a reason the Rockets beat them quite thoroughly in the first 3 matchups of this season. But in my opinion, the biggest reason for that, the presence of Chris Paul. Refresher in those 3 wins the Rockets had over the Spurs. The first game back in December, Rockets won in a romp. He had 28 points, which was a team high, had 8 assists, which was a team high, and he did it on 56% shooting from the field. Game 2, that was a tight one in San Antonio, I believe in February. It was a tight game in the middle of the fourth quarter, and Chris Paul then had 6 straight points, all of them from mid-range, to break open the game. game three, which was a couple of weeks ago in Houston, Chris Paul had an absurd, in 23 minutes, this stat line, get a load of this, 18 points, 9 assists on 73% shooting in 23 minutes. Quite simply, Chris Paul is the difference against the Spurs. I'll quote Craig Ackerman, Rockets lead play-by-play broadcaster, who said this on Twitter. It's Chris Paul's ability to probe and find the soft spots in the middle of the Spurs' defense between the rim and the three-point line. That's the big reason why the Rockets have excelled against the Spurs this season. To put it simply, without Chris Paul, it looks very similar to the Rockets-Spurs matchup from a year ago. And even though last season, when the Rockets went 55-27 and had this revolutionary offense with Mike D'Antoni, and the question was, for the season as a whole, how do you improve the defense to get from top half of the league to being top 10, even top 5, which they've largely done, and so you credit P.J. Tucker, Luke Bamute, who were out there, and also Chris Paul, who's been a regular first-team all-defense guy throughout his career. But in terms of the Spurs matchup specifically, it was actually offense where the Spurs fell, where the Rockets, fell flat against the Spurs, especially when the series was there to be had in the second half and overtime of Game 5, and then in Game 6 when they were lifeless, lost by almost 40, scored below 80 points. It's the offense against the Spurs, led by Greg Popovich, one of the best tacticians the game has ever seen. Extreme length all the way around. The Spurs have a lot of guys that you're not going to mistake some of their veteran role players, the likes of Pau Gasol, Rudy Gay, LaMarcus Aldridge, for being dynamic defensive players in a vacuum, but their length collectively causes a lot of problems. We saw that in the playoffs last year, and I think we saw that today as well. It's tough for the Rockets to get straight to the rim, and they're able to contest threes. The Rockets in the game making just 6 three-pointers. The Rockets had a streak going into the game, an NBA record streak of 83 consecutive games in which they had made at least 9 three-pointers. That snapped. It wasn't even close. The Rockets just did not get off their usual looks. The Spurs had a lot of length, so the Rockets couldn't get to the rim, and the few times they did, the threes they got were fairly well contested. James Harden made just 1 of 6. That continues a downtrend for him. Now, we'll discuss in the second segment why I'm not quite as concerned about James in this individual game, at least from the standpoint of three-point shooting. But in this segment, to me, it's bigger than just James Harden. It's the team as a whole. It's that if you only have one creator, Greg Popovich will find a way to grind you to a halt. That's what we saw last year. And even without Kawhi Leonard, everyone always looks at Game 6 and says, well, Kawhi wasn't out there. Well, the Spurs' defensive success was a lot bigger than Kawhi Leonard. Now, yes, when he's healthy, and by the way, I do not expect him to return this season based on everything we've heard, including a report just yesterday from Adrian Wojnarowski. Seems like he's done, so no, I don't really see a Kawhi Leonard miracle return happening and elevating the Spurs into what they are, into more than what they are. But even without Kawhi, just as was the case in Game 6 last year, the Spurs' defensive identity is Greg Popovich. It's not Kawhi Leonard. And their team defense, they can stop your plan A. And the Rockets, for all of their success, especially against a Spurs team that is committed either in a playoff series or in this case playing for their playoff lives, they can do a good job of taking away your plan A. So you need to have multiple modes of attack. You need to be able to have a diverse approach. And that's where Chris Paul is so crucial. Not just, of course, having a second playmaker, but in how he approaches the game. The fact that he is so good in the mid-range, off the drive. The fact that if James Harden, the initial action isn't successful, then you can swing it to the other side of the court and have someone that's able to create. Now, Eric Gordon made his return to the lineup today. He shot relatively well, which is good to see. 18 points, 7 of 15 shooting, 2 of 4 from 3. Really, he was the only Rocket that showed any sort of life. Maybe Gerald Green, who was 2 of 6 behind the arc. But Eric Gordon, no one is going to mistake him for Chris Paul as a creator. It's not just a matter of the shots he takes himself. It's also how he sets up his teammates. And while Eric Gordon, he's a good creator, he's not a top 10 elite option like Chris Paul is. So when you brought in Chris Paul, in my opinion, it's the elite defenses in a playoff setting where you need him most. And the Spurs, even without Kawhi Leonard, they're still a really strong defensive team. As long as Greg Popovich is there, they will be. So to me, more than anything else, yes, a lot of it can be chalked up to the Rockets being a little lethargic. But in terms of bigger picture, looking at factors aside from just rest, in terms of the Rockets not really going all out, maintenance, blah, 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 in terms of what actually happened, in my opinion, in terms of controlling what you can control, it's about the absence of Chris Paul. He is enormous for this particular matchup. And as far as do I take anything out of it if the Rockets play the Spurs in the playoffs, if for some reason they don't have Chris Paul, yeah, I do. If the Rockets don't have Chris Paul, even with P.J. Tucker and Luke Bamute, the offensive dynamic that eventually slowed you a crawl in that series a year ago, it's still there. So for the Rockets to beat San Antonio, they need Chris Paul. But the bottom line is, you can say that about the Rockets winning a championship. They're not going to win a championship without Chris Paul. There's no reason to worry. The Rockets have been insistent throughout this past week that if the games are meaningful, Chris Paul would play. It's just because they've clinched the number one seed. There's no reason to run him out there. But he needs to get back to 100% because I think today is a good reminder of just how important Chris Paul is. Even though James Harden is going to win MVP in an almost unanimous manner this year, it's still not enough against top-tier defenses, especially when you get to a playoff setting. You need Chris Paul's return, and that, to me, more than anything else, stood out from today's 100-83 loss. Now, aside from the issues with Chris, the other things that stood out, we mentioned the shooting in this one. The guy that I'm going to fixate on is James Harden. 8 of 19 overall, 25 points, 8 assists, led the team in scoring, but just 1 of 6 from behind the arc. And when you couple it with the homestand, in which he was 5 of 34, that means James is just 6 of 40 in his last 6 games. Since the All-Star break from the 3-point line, or from behind it, I should say, he's below 30%. So this is more than just a one-off. This has been going on for a while. We heard from Kelly Eco, who was covering the game. He traveled out there. I stayed behind in Houston, but Kelly said at the half, James was working on nothing but threes. So you know he is taking it seriously. Now, if you want a silver lining, the 2 games in the past month that have been the closest thing to a heavyweight fight, that the Rockets have really, really needed him, he's been there. In Toronto, 4 of 8 from deep. In Portland, 5 of 7. So when the stakes have been at their highest, he's shown an ability to make those shots. I would also argue that without Chris Paul, he's getting a lower quality of looks. And Chris Paul has missed all but one game over the past 2 weeks. So I think that has something to do, especially the homestand in today. For example, of the 6 threes he got today, I would say only one of them that I recall was actually a good, clean look, what you consider a normal Harden shot. The others were largely contested heaves at the end of the shot clock when the Rockets had options really A through C on a given possession all snuffed out and someone just had to throw the ball at the rim. In an ideal world, James would probably make one of those, but in reality, all are low percentage shots. So in terms of this game today, I didn't see that much that discouraged me more because it wasn't like he had that many open looks to miss, period. However, bigger picture, it is a theme. As I said on Friday's show, the good news is that largely the regression from James Harden has been compensated for by Eric Gordon, who, as we mentioned, was 2 of 4 in today's game. So he's about 47% still from behind the arc in the games that he's played since late February, coming back from the All-Star break. So in general, any regression from Harden has been made up for, and it's why the Rockets, going into today, only lost one game in this stretch. Any decline in from Harden from three has been offset by Gordon getting back closer to his career numbers, and both of those guys now, not quite suddenly, very close to their career norms from behind the arc for the season. That said, there is a such a thing for shooters as being in or out of rhythm. So that's why these final 5 games, you can't just put the team in bubble wrap. I do think it's important for James to see the ball go through the bucket. That's why he was out there at halftime practicing as much as he was. Now, I don't think today is necessarily a step in the wrong direction, because as I said, there just weren't very many open looks, period. Combination of Chris Paul's absence and the Spurs just playing a really good defensive game, being very committed, wanting it more than the Rockets. But these last 5 games, that's one of the reasons, my guess is that all the regulars, James included, get one more off day. But that's why you're not just going to put him in bubble wrap. There is something towards being in rhythm. And as good as Eric Gordon has been, when you get to the playoffs, even in the first round, it's conceivable in the first round, you could draw a Utah team that's been red hot of late, a Minnesota team that, say what you will, has potentially 2 superstars in Karl Anthony Towns and Jimmy Butler, also star quality players, at least talent-wise, and guys like Andrew Wiggins, Jeff Teague. So even in round one, there's potential for you to play a really good team. And when you're playing a really good team, sometimes the defenses are going to be tough the way they were Sunday, and you're just going to need, late in the game, James Harden to go out there and make a tough shot. And right now, I don't think he's really feeling that good about himself. Now, as I said, overall, it's been offset by Eric Gordon getting going again. And over the balance of the 48 minutes, maybe that offsets, especially the regular season. But in the playoffs, I don't know that Eric Gordon's going to be the guy, especially if things get sticky late in the game, that you're going to turn to. You're going to turn to James Harden. And so as the star of your team, you want him feeling as confident as he can. And as evidenced by what we saw at the half and evidenced by the 6 of 40 in his last 6 games, look, there might be some extenuating circumstances. Certainly Chris Paul's absence. And actually, the one game that Chris played, James did not play. So actually, James on the home stand did not have the benefit of Chris Paul setting him up for any at all. So certainly that allowed defenses to shade him even more. But all that said, that's only an excuse to a point. 6 of 40, look, that's not a good stretch. It's an emphasis for him. And so that's why you're not going to see him go into bubble wrap. You do want to see him get some confidence. Now, I realize that even if he has a couple of good games, you're still going to see some critics out there saying, well, since the All-Star break, it's still overall below 30% or close to 30%, whatever it ends up at. That's just the reality. He's had a prolonged slump over the past 4 to 5 weeks from three. It is what it is. The key is to, does he get over the final 5 games, some positive momentum going forward? Because these things do turn. You have lots of stretches, both positive and negative, over a season. So I think for Harden going into the playoffs, it's less about, well, what has he done the past 2 months? It's more about what has he done the last week or two. That's going to be most indicative of how he's feeling about his shooting stroke. Upside, I know three-pointers and free throws, not the same thing, but he missed 6 free throws on Friday, 11 of 17. Sunday, he was 8 of 8, so he did straighten out his free throw stroke. Hopefully, the next thing in line is the three-point stroke, and maybe if Chris Paul returns on Tuesday, you're going to have some more tougher opponents this week, Washington, Portland, and Oklahoma City this weekend. We'll get a chance to see if that plays out, because at this point, again, the results in the standings don't matter with the Rockets having clinched number one seed. But for individuals, there is such a thing as positive momentum heading into the playoffs, how you are feeling about your game, whether you're in rhythm. And for James, that three-point shot, I don't necessarily think it was the determinant of what happened on Sunday, because I don't think the Rockets got him very good looks, period. But in terms of where the Rockets want to go and ultimately winning a title, yeah, it's an issue. And I think both he and the team are aware of it, and that's why he's going to play, I would guess, all but one of the final 5 games, so that hopefully he can get feeling good about that shot again before the postseason starts 2 weeks from this Sunday, or maybe 2 weeks from yesterday. So for the final segment, I'm going to go further down the depth chart. I want to lead by talking about the role of Chris against San Antonio and then the James three-point slump, because I know those are the two biggest 10,000-foot things going on with this team right now. The other thing that really intrigued me in this game, and you got to go far down the rotation, it's something we discussed the past few games, it's Gerald Green versus Joe Johnson. And what intrigued me most, Gerald Green, 29 minutes, Joe Johnson, 16. The reason this intrigued me so much, Friday was Joe's best game of the year. I said it in the Phoenix recap, especially late in the third quarter, he was essential. And even coming off a great game, Gerald played almost double the minutes, 29 to 16. Maybe he would have played double the minutes. Gerald actually left with a couple of minutes to go in the first half after briefly tweaking his leg, that collision we mentioned earlier with Patty Mills. Joe didn't play especially well, didn't score, 0 of 4 in his 16 minutes. Gerald, 3 of 8, 2 of 6 from 3, 11 points in his 29 minutes, did have 8 rebounds, also had a key block. And that, to me, his presence on the glass, he also had 9 rebounds the last time these two teams played, and the block, he's bringing more consistent energy on the defensive end. He gives you more flexibility. And against a team like the Spurs, against a smart playoff team, they will find ways to take advantage of a 36-year-old Joe Johnson on the defensive end. And so it's really eye-catching to me to see that even after Joe played so well on Friday, that Gerald still plays essentially double the minutes. And it's not like Gerald had a great game on Friday. Now, yes, he had the buzzer beater. He had 3 three-pointers in the fourth quarter, so he was a huge part of why you won. It was a great moment for Gerald. But the game as a whole, he missed a lot of open looks. And despite Gerald missing a lot of shots on Friday, it hasn't been a great game or week for him from a shooting perspective, he still played more than Joe. And I think it reflects the fact that he just gives you so much more flexibility on the defensive end. His speed, his energy, it's infectious. And he just brings you skill sets that Joe can't match. And I've said that based on Mike's trust in Joe on their prior experience all those years ago in Phoenix, that maybe it was possible for Joe over the final 5 to 6 games, if he shows something, to win back that final wing spot in the playoff rotation. But as I said last Thursday, my guess is that Gerald has kind of, to a lot of folks' surprise, including mine, taken the lead now. I would say that I'm even more entrenched in the position that it's Gerald with the lead, because even after Joe played very well against Phoenix, you still had Mike trust Gerald more, and, well, he played better. 11-8 in 29 minutes compared to Joe, who went scoreless in his 16 minutes and essentially played just half the minutes. And Friday, I don't think it's a coincidence that Joe Johnson, he is a better ball handler than Gerald, so it would have been very easy to start Joe alongside James Harden. No, they started Gerald, because I think you're at a point now where they realize that against most teams, the flexibility that Gerald gives you, not just offensively, but defensively, because of his athleticism, it's critical. No one's going to look at Gerald as a defensive stopper, but he has enough energy, he has enough speed, he has enough quick twitch muscle fiber, let's call it, that when you need to scramble against teams that, especially in today's NBA, are often 4 or 5 out, Joe Johnson can't recover as well as Gerald does. Now, in January, he was a big defensive liability, maybe because his conditioning wasn't there coming off the couch in late December. Also, they had to play him tons of minutes because with all the injuries, they were short on bodies. Also, I've asked Gerald about it. He said that he did not know the schemes that well, which is understandable, not going through training camp with the team. Well, right now, he says his conditioning is better. He knows the schemes. And, well, the results have been better. Defensively, again, he's not a stopper, but he's holding his own. And if he holds his own, being a better defender and a better shooter, it's a 3-and-D league. Now, nobody's going to consider Gerald a great defender. I understand that. But if you are a better and more consistent three-point shooter and a more consistent defender, even if Joe is a little bit better as a passer and certainly creating his own shot, especially on the low block, there are certain situations where you may need that. It was critical in that late third quarter Friday against Phoenix. But coming off that game, for D'Antoni again to give Gerald more minutes, to me, that speaks volumes about where he sees those two players right now. I'm not going to say it's 100% that Gerald plays ahead of Joe in the playoffs, so I'll have to see what happens over the final 5 games, and also there could be certain matchups that tilt the scale. But in my opinion, Mike D'Antoni has seen over the past month or two exactly what you guys have seen, and that's why Gerald Green played 29 minutes on Sunday, even after an injury. They still put him back out there. Fortunately, he seems to be okay. But Mike D'Antoni, he sees the value, and I think Gerald is going to be a playoff player for you, and I think he's earned it. And that, to me, might be the biggest positive takeaway from Sunday, a game in which the Rockets otherwise were largely disinterested in a 100-83 loss. So on that note, I will end things because, well, we don't want to go on too long talking about a game in which the Rockets didn't seem to care that much about it, so why should we? Kidding, of course. The Rockets have good reason not to care after clinching the league's number one spot Saturday night. Let's reiterate that. With Toronto's loss in Boston for the first time in franchise history, the Rockets, now 62-15 on the year, have clinched the NBA's best record and home court advantage throughout the playoffs. So despite what happened on the floor Sunday, I think you can still say how sweet it is. The Rockets, what they have done this season is something they have never done before. And so even after their first loss in the last 12 tries, I think you have to feel pretty good about yourself going into this new week. So I think that's an appropriate spot to wrap this show. As always, you want more from me, best place to get it is Twitter. I am on Twitter at Ben Dubose. Show is on Twitter at Lockdown Rockets, also LockdownRockets at gmail.com, Facebook.com/LockdownRockets, and LockdownRockets.com. Those are all great places where you can obviously email, but also read our content, reach out via Facebook, ask questions about the team, suggestions for the show, inquiries about potentially being an advertiser as the only daily podcast covering the NBA's best team and now heading towards the playoffs. We're having big audiences these days, so if you'd like to take advantage of that, I would love to hear from you. We have some good rates. We have some good specials upcoming for the playoffs, so please don't hesitate to reach out if we can help you on that front, or if you just want more knowledge about the team, or if you've got questions. The Rockets do have 3 home games this week, so if you want to hear from Mike D'Antoni about a certain subject, reach out to me, and I'd be happy to ask him on your behalf. Once again, the unhappy final from AT&T Center, almost at Toyota Center, but yes, this is the one road game for the Rockets in this 9-game stretch on Sunday afternoon. Maybe that's another reason for the lethargic performance too, by the way, an uncharacteristic 2:30 start. Anyway, Spurs 100, Rockets 83, Rockets 11-game winning streak snap. They fall to 62-15. Chris Paul sat out again, but more importantly, The Rockets, courtesy of Toronto's loss on Saturday night, have now clinched home court advantage throughout the entire NBA playoffs for the first time in franchise history. So on that note, go enjoy it, Houston. Enjoy the rest of a beautiful Sunday, and we'll be talking again very soon right here on Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's best basketball team.